Hello, I'm Arnold Hamilton, editor of the Oklahoma Observer.
And I'm Marianne Martin, and this is ObserverCast, your weekly deep dive into Oklahoma politics and policy, powered by the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation. Valentine's Day, about a week and a half ago, there was an election. There were elections around the state, actually, but there was one particular election besides the bond election in my own community that really caught my attention. And the more I learned about it, the more sordid it became. And I just realized it's really an interesting snapshot, kind of microcosm. I don't know. It offers some insight into the state of Democratic politics, I think, in the state of Oklahoma. And so it's not really just about Oklahoma County politics or Oklahoma City politics today. We're talking about kind of the larger politics of the Democratic Party in the state of Oklahoma. So for those who aren't aware, there were city council elections in Oklahoma City last week. there was a number of races, but one in particular was interesting. So if there's a progressive elected official in the state of Oklahoma, it is Jo Beth Harmon. And somehow she found herself with someone opposing her candidacy for re-election. And what really makes that peculiar was that it was another Democrat that ran against her. And then I found out that it was Democrats that ran the Democrat against Jo Beth. And so and I'm not really surprised, but it's wildly disappointing, to say the least, considering that we should all be pulling in the same direction instead of trying to divide and conquer each other. So there's no better people to have on to talk about this that have no greater insight into the state party than the one and only Jo Hartman and Cassie Peters. And I'll let them introduce themselves, and because I also want to know what exactly they're up to these days. That's kind of like maybe the really breaking news this week, because they've kind of turned a new corner in their careers, and so I want to hear about that as well, Cassie and Joe. But also, really, I'd like to get your take on what happened with Jo Beth and why we should be concerned. So Cassie, Joe, welcome. It's so great to see both of you. It's actually been a long time since I've seen you guys in person, but it's just great to see you. So yeah, tell us who you are and tell us what you do.
Hi there. it's good to see y'all, and thank you so much for having us. You know, we love to talk about all of this. So, you know, even better to talk with y'all. I'm Cassie Peters. Was the owner, partner, Skyfire Media, which we will talk about all of that here in a little bit. And I've been working in politics for about 20 years at this point, which, you know, we won't talk about my age, but yeah, 20 years at this point.
Your age.
And specifically almost solely at the local and like state ledge level. And for us, like it's how you really like make the change. It's also where the damage can be done. So for us, it's like really, that's where our heart is. And let's see, from Marlow, Oklahoma, Chickasaw Choctaw. I'm a Sooner, went to OU. I guess that's me. We're married. We always like to say that because then our kids will end up coming up. We've got two kids, age 12, age 6, and three dogs and a whole lot of plant babies. So yeah, that's me.
And I'm Joe Hartman, the other half of Skyfire Media that was. Like I said, we'll talk about that. I've been doing local politics for about 20 years, either at the Capitol probably it's been almost 20 years, Arnold, since you were up at the Capitol and I was working for the House Democrats.
Well, that's right, for Danny Morgan and company.
Yeah,
That was when we first took the Observer over. That was 17 years ago.
Wow.
So think about that. My hair was not nearly that gray then. I do want to point that out. I still had kids at home then. So
that
probably accelerated it as much as anything.
Oh, yeah.
And Yeah. And so I actually grew up here in Oklahoma City, not far. We live in Mesta Park. I grew up in Northwest Oklahoma City. And my grandmother worked at the Capitol for a long time. So I just kind of grew up going there with her and just kind of fell right into it right after high school and college. So and I'm here. And really, this is the kind of to your point, Marianne. You know, when I worked for Danny Morgan, or, you know, 15, 20 years ago when Arnold was up there, you know, just looking at who was elected at the legislative level, Democrats were largely rural. And, you know, I always believed that our cities were going to become the core of the Democratic Party. I mean, you could have seen it in ever since 2004. You know, that's when we first lost the House of Representatives. And what's happened is, I mean, there's now no rural Democrats elected at the state level. And that's largely because our cities have changed so much in that they've gained population. And I think going into to Joe Beth's election, if you look at, she was first elected 4 years ago. It was an open seat. Margaret Salyer was the city councilwoman, and she decided not to run. And also at that time, Jason Dunnington was the state representative that kind of overlaid. It's roughly the same area, the House District and Ward 6. And just in those 4 years, two radically different, not just individuals, but people, Maury Turner, you know, defeated Jason Dunnington, and Joe Beth Hammond won Meg Salyer's seat. And I think it is just a microcosm of the transformation of the core of Oklahoma City, but also the just the surrounding area too. I think, you know, and I think there's with any type of change, you know, the I don't want to say people who've been around for a while or have been used to things one way don't like change, even if the change is happening whether they want it or not. And I think that's kind of what you saw play out in this election, is that you know, if you there's the Oklahoma City Council, is there's just always been a so people have a very what an Oklahoma City councilor looks like to a lot of people that have probably been around Oklahoma City politics for a couple decades is that it was very white, it was very male, and it was very much friends of some of the bigger corporations and business here in Oklahoma City.
More establishment
types. Yeah. I mean, what you'd call establishment types. And, you know, Joe Beth and quite frankly, two of her fellow city councilors who won around the same time, and James Cooper and Nikki Nice, don't fit that profile. I personally believe that they are better profiles of the people that vote and live in their districts now. But anyways, that's kind of, sorry to kind of take it there. Go ahead.
No. Arnold, do you have a question?
I was just going to say, so do you think that's the sort of the bluest dot on the map in Oklahoma?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I was talking to some friends the other day and I was like, listen, this is my little safe haven, if you will. I mean, I would say here in Norman, and of course, Norman's had its interesting
issues too.
Yeah, but, you know, I think here in this part of the city, you see a lot of transition, right? I mean, half of our street that we live on, we've lived here for 8 years. Is that right? Mm-hmm. We moved here 8 years ago to get our kids in Wilson Elementary, which is an amazing public school, an arts integration school. And, you know, we moved here to rent and we ended up buying our house. And if you look at the transformation from the last 8 years, even when we've been here, it's drastic. And it's a lot more young families moving in, you know, people from out of state that are not necessarily buying into the politics that's happening down at the state capitol, right? And they don't know the history of like where Oklahoma City's been. They just see, you know, people experiencing homelessness. They see that we don't have connected bus routes with sidewalks. They see some of these challenges that I really think weren't necessarily being paid attention to back then, you know, even when we moved into the district. So,
I mean, there has been such a remarkable transformation of, you know, Oklahoma County alone, right? So, because we moved out of state in 2005, we moved back in 2013, beginning of 2013. And just between, you know, 2005 and 2013, it was just, it wasn't like it was at all. You know, growing up in Dell City, and every time we'd go to downtown Oklahoma City, there was nothing to do in the late 90s in downtown Oklahoma City. You know, so just the infusion of different ideas and people and community in that core area of downtown, I mean, if you haven't been here very long, it just, you can appreciate just how different it is, core Oklahoma City. And so, you know, having people like, you know, counselors like Joe Beth, like Nikki Nice, and like, you know, Cooper, I mean, that makes a huge difference in really kind of the tone of the discussions and the focus of the discussions on council. But, you know, I'm just shocked. I don't know. I mean, Merrick Cornett could have probably run if she lived in a different part of town and been elected.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, on that, you said like changing the discussion, and that's what I think you saw. I mean, for the listeners out here, social media was behind Joe Beth, especially Twitter. Like I've never seen, the other campaign I've seen like that was Mari Turner's, right? Where people were just fiercely like behind her. And part of the reason is because she was that dissenting voice asking the questions, you know, during the MAPS 4 debate, she was the one, not just her, but like, you know, some of the left-leaning members of the council, they were the ones that were pushing for more mental health spending, more, you know, homeless relief, some of these issues that like really need to be paid attention to. Because like, if our city doesn't pay attention to the most vulnerable citizens, we're never going to succeed, right? That's just the truth of it. And so you saw that behind her. I mean, and one other thing about Joe Beth is she's an incredibly kind person. And so many people would paint this caricature of her that was actually not anywhere near reality because of some of the issues she stood up for. And I think you're right, Marianne. I think Merrick running against in any other ward or against any other candidate, like I could see
successful.
Yeah. I mean, and the other thing, it's like, this ward can look beyond some of the traditional establishment ideas. You know, we can look beyond only bringing jobs here. We can look beyond economic development because we really are progressive. We really are left. We really do see, you know, where our state and our city can go. And I think that that's what you saw. Again, like new families moving in, they don't know anything about the MAPS projects. They don't know anything about, you know, that downtown didn't have anything. They're living in a completely different city than I think a lot of the establishment in Oklahoma City believes we're living in.
And also just to give credit to Joe Beth too, not only are her politics a match for the ward, she's an incredibly hard worker, probably one of our hardest working candidates we've ever worked with. And so I believe, you know, we always tell these, especially these local candidates, where you can knock doors and talk to every voter. When there's attacks or people try and paint those caricatures that Cassie talked about, well, she'd already talked to those voters at the door once, if not twice.
Yeah. And I mean, what came across with her, especially, was the authenticity. And, you know, she had nothing to hide. She is who she is. Like, if people didn't want to vote for her, that's okay, right? Like, she was authentic the entire time. And that was something we would push with candidates. It's like, be yourself. People can see through the BS. And unfortunately, I think that was one thing at play in here is, you know, I think the other side was, you know, relying solely on poll numbers, relying solely on what other organizations out here told them to say, told them to believe. And that never works, in my opinion. Like, it's just a surefire way with these highly educated voters who are literally doing their research constantly. I mean, that just never works, because especially when you're knocking the door two and three times. So,
and given the proximity of Joe Beth, you know, to her, who she's representing versus, say, the proximity of someone running for this, you know, U.S. Senate, right? Or even just the you know, the state Senate. It's so much easier for people to, like, know Joe Beth, understand what Mark, you know, Merrick's doing, and what she's pulling, and really just kind of see the flaws in the attacks against Joe Beth. I mean, it's not even flaws. I mean, that was total bullshit. I mean, some of the worst astroturfing, you know, like at the smallest level, at the most local level that you can get practically. And I mean, so the idea that that could somehow fly, it would make sense in like a statewide race. I just can't, I mean, to pull it at something that local is really bizarre. When the person could actually be your neighbor, you know, Joe Beth could have lived next door to you. And so it was really interesting. But can we really talk about the fact that this was a Democrat on Democrat? Can we touch on that, please? Or dive deep into it? I'd really like to dive deep into it.
Absolutely.
What's going on?
Well, I think I'll take this one first and then you can go. I think specifically
I don't want to jeopardize anyone's livelihood.
It's fine. Yeah. I mean, Merrick is a Democrat. I mean, for all intents and purposes, like, she and Joe Beth probably agree on more than they disagree on, right? And us too, right? However, like, that's not who was running her campaign. That's not who was influencing her campaign. What you saw here, I mean, she had a Republican campaign manager who we actually consider a friend, yeah, good guy.
Great.
You know, she had a lot of Republican support behind her. And that
Hang on. Are you going to name names here?
Her campaign manager was Evan Handy. He's a good guy, does a lot of campaigns around the state. I mean, we literally text him all the time. So it's nothing against him, you know, this business is business, right? And then you see like the chamber behind her. You see some of these other organizations that, you know, only look at one issue, don't necessarily sit down and talk about the nuance of these issues with Joe Beth, right? And the other organization behind Merrick was the FOP, which Fraternal Order of Police. And you see a lot of national articles about how the FOP is one of the most extreme organizations in the country when it comes to policing, and are constantly not necessarily holding their officers accountable when it comes to police violence. And with Oklahoma City being pretty bad, what is it, like second in the country, first in the country per capita for police violence and murders? It's not good. So you had some of these groups behind her, and that independent expenditure you brought up, Marianne, I mean, that was funded by OCPA, the organization that has literally pushed some of the most extreme legislation in this state. And
the seething sulfurous pit of the worst ideas in the state of Oklahoma.
And, you know, not even that, the vendor they were paying was Ted Cruz's former campaign manager. So of course they don't know this electorate. Of course they don't know a text that says the murder of Black people by police is terrorism, because it is, right? Like, it is a form of Black people in this country cannot feel safe in their own communities. Like, they literally live in survival mode because they don't know if they get stopped by a cop, you know, for speeding, if they're going to live or not. And that's not okay. And that's not okay with a lot of people in this ward. And, you know, I'll shut up in a second, Joe. You know, the Democrat on Democrat, I mean, when we first heard this, we were like, well, that's dumb. You know, it's not, this is not the race to run. Like, it's just not. And there were some people like in our neighborhood that just, you know, did want to recruit someone else to like run for this ward because they didn't feel like the establishment type of messaging was being represented. I disagree completely. But I don't know if it's necessarily like been pushed by a lot of Democrats to have somebody run against Joe Beth. It was very much trying to get that dissenting voice off the council.
There is a council meeting right after Joe Beth was first elected, and on the agenda was a tax credit for Boeing. I think it was for some contracting jobs here in Oklahoma City at Tinker. And I don't remember specifically, you know, how much it was for, but Joe Beth, I mean, she looked at this and she started asking questions. Well, if why are we spending this much money on these jobs who are only guaranteed for a year? Well, we could use some of that to, you know, for sidewalks or for public housing. I mean, and so she started asking these questions, and then Joe Beth and James Cooper chimed in, and they, you know, were asking questions about it. And then when it came time to vote, the vote was 5-3. I think someone was gone that day. And I think the city chamber realized, oh, wow, if there was just one vote difference there, we wanted to pass this tax credit. And Boeing, it's Boeing. They have all the money in the world. I'm sure they still would have had those jobs here because they're needed at Tinker.
Yeah.
But I think that very much highlighted, okay, even though, I mean, the three of them, and they don't always vote together. They're not a block, right? They each very much come up with their own, you know, ideas and their way to approach things. But I think that, first of all, it just shows that Joe Beth is someone who really does her homework, right? This was just something on the agenda that I think everyone just thought it's pretty routine. Like, let me just put it that way. That's and the fact that questions were asked, it was pointed out, and the vote was closer than probably it ever been, I think scared some people. And I think that was kind of the red flag that really scared some people. And
you know, I don't think there's anything more frightening to the establishment than a woman who asks questions.
Who also rides a bike, has short hair and tattoos, right?
Like, I know.
Millennial.
I know. She's kind of like a trifecta of for, you know, so totally. But the minute you're a woman who asks questions and just doesn't care, you know, that you're gonna get some attention.
Well, the other two, you know, James Cooper is a gay man of color, and Nikki Nice is a black woman. And right. So, you know,
it's the only diversity on the council, right? Like, pretty much. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So
it ain't the Gaylord era's Oklahoma City anymore, is it?
It's not. And I mean, you see that all the time. Like, you read Boomtown, right? Like, is that the name of the book?
Yeah,
Boomtown, yeah. You're in Boomtown, and like, you hear about like where Oklahoma City started. Literally, Anton Klassen built our home, right? Like, and we live right off of Klassen, right? So like, you see these names, Nichols Hills, like all of these different people who founded the city. And, you know, I'm grateful. Like, I love living in Oklahoma City. However, like, it's just changed a lot. And I think you also saw that in the Maury Turner and Jason Dunnington race. You saw, like, you know, somebody who was more moderate, like more friendly with the business community, as opposed to someone who was going to stand up for different progressive issues than that. Right. And that's what people want right now. And you're seeing this not just here, but across the country, in my opinion. You're seeing a different type of Democrat emerging. And in my opinion, it's millennials really pushing a lot of that. And, you know, I think as Gen Z gets older, and I don't even know what they're calling Josie's generation. Yeah. She's 12. I have no idea what they're calling that generation. But I mean, they are completely different. And the kids are all right. The kids are going to save this, right?
100%. Yeah. 100%. Like, my daughter, my soon to be 16-year-old, I mean, she gets it, right? She gets it, you know. And I don't think it's just me. I don't think it's just our, you know, her parents' influence. Like, she gets it.
Yeah, I mean, Josie's school literally walked out and did a protest about the Julius Jones stuff, and like, in support of Ukraine. Like, these are middle schoolers, right? They are paying attention. Yeah. And that gives me so much hope. But so are millennials, right? Like, that's the thing. It's like, we see homeless people sleeping in the cold outside, and we're like, why the hell is that happening when we are giving handouts to businesses, when we are building $800,000 homes in the Wheeler District, as opposed to building some kind of high density housing where we could actually house these people, right? And giving tax credits for those types of developments. That can't happen anymore. And I think you see a big movement of that here in the city, in the core of Oklahoma City, let me be clear.
And I feel like the nuance of that is really, like, you know, it's not necessarily, and I know we're all aware that it's just kind of ironic that in the state legislature, it's the Democrats who are like, wait a minute, hold up, that's big government, you know, let's dial it back to, you know, small government per se, right? But I mean, we want the smart use of government, right? And so these tax incentives, you know, at the local level, I mean, that's an issue down here in Norman as well with like the, you know, the UNT area and stuff, UNP area.
Oh, we like, remember when we lived there, all about the TIF districts. My goodness.
Oh,
the
good late God.
Claudia Griffiths, yes. Representative Claudia Griffiths would always... we'd talk about it for hours. So,
and I mean, and I don't know if either of you are familiar with Cynthia Rogers and Stephen Ellis, but you know, two economics professors at the university who are like the thorn in the city of Norman's side, right? And so, and the school district, which I totally appreciate, but they just bring up this like, is this really a smart use of government dollars? So this idea that we're like these freewheelingly just like handing out dollars to everybody because we're Democrats, like, wait a minute, like, why are we giving it to these businesses that are going to do nothing in return for the community when instead we could be giving it directly to the community, to the members who need it most, right? That's the discussion that's really like shifted. And I think that's the nuance of Democratic politics at the local level specifically. But, you know, I just kind of wonder though, if we see this, you know, at the very local level, because you know, this discussion really brings home like what has I would say is like the entire ethos of what Sky or Fire was is like you all focused at the local level, you know, school boards, city council races were your bailiwick. But I'm just wondering, like, is this kind of a larger, do you see this as a larger tactic that the Republican Party might take, specifically in our urban areas, you know, our urban and suburban areas in Oklahoma that are trending purple, if not blue? I mean, because I think we've all looked at that map from the state races, right? Where, you know, where Cleveland County, you know, what used to be pretty red, the mm-hmm. northern Cleveland County, just north of Norman and DeMoor is, woo, that's,
I see that as like the next trending part of the state, right? Like, I mean, I've told Joe that. I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen, but it's
purple, that happen. Part of town. Yeah. Yeah.
And right? I mean, that every, like even Edmond, some of the Edmond yeah. precincts, you know, actually were either light red or a little bit more purple than normal. And you
right.
know,
I mean, it's closer, yeah. it's closer to at least the halfway point.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, I mean, are we going to see, I'm sorry, okay. Go ahead, Joe.
I've been on a drumbeat for a pretty long time now that, you know, any Democrat running statewide needs to win 7 counties, you know, and that, and, you know, Oklahoma City, Tulsa, Cleveland, Payne, Comanche, there's one or two, I can't remember, but basically it's the most 7 populous counties.
It's the one, Chickasaw.
Oh, Pontotoc and Muskogee. That's yeah. it with yeah. the, and so.
We're such.
I know. Just you know, and that's still a hard lift, I think, with current demographics. But I think, again, because what's going to happen is as demographics continue to change, I mean, we'll see Democrats be able to run up those margins higher. And quite frankly, it's we're finally turning into a real city, because this is what happened, you know.
And I mean, this is what has happened in a lot of cities, mm-hmm. Kansas City, yeah. Houston, like, I mean, like some of these larger cities out here, Phoenix, right? Yeah, like yeah. That have really started shifting, you know, this rural to urban, the suburban districts, blah, blah, blah. But I mean, it's interesting to look at that at the city council level, you know, looking at the Ward 8 race, which is basically the northern part of Oklahoma City, where it's weird. People have like Edmonds Utilities and like Deer Creek Schools and like Oklahoma City addresses. It's just bonkers. You can't keep it straight. However, like those people are, you know, some of the people who voted for Kendra Horn. Then they also voted for Stephanie Bice, right? It's those like PTA moms that are involved that don't like the extremism happening at the Capitol that, you know, sometimes are your, what we call your persuadable voters, right? And you see the Ward 8 race, and Mark Stonecipher has been an incumbent he's been there for a while, yeah, right?
Like 8 years now.
And the last two city council races he faced, I mean, they were a challenge. They weren't necessarily like going to beat him, but, you know, forget the woman who ran last time, but she got in the low 40s. Mm-hmm. And then Amy Warren, that's her name,
yep,
right?
Yep.
She got, I think, 38% with another candidate pulling some of those votes. That is still a challenge, right? Like he almost got into a runoff.
Yeah.
And that's, and he's very like establishment, very pro business, very pro, like some of the most extreme stuff out here. So like, that's where I think you see some of the shift happening is in these outlying areas. And then I think one thing we have to talk about is how giant our wards are. Oh. And it's interesting you bring up like that this is local. It is to a degree, but what are our wards? 138,000 people, something as giant as that.
Oh, and holy crap. So that's bigger than the state. Oh, wow.
However, but our turnout's horrible, right? Like then you've got, you know, nobody voting. So, you know, you look at it like that. It's like, you know, well, they're still tiny, but like expanding the wards has got to happen, right? Like getting more wards and looking at some of the annexation that happened here in Oklahoma City, that has made our city gigantic, right? And probably unmanageable if I was guessing.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at, it's really pronounced in, a couple of districts. So Todd Stone's district, Todd Stone has a Norman address. He still lives in Oklahoma City, but he lives, you know, just north of Norman, and that has Capitol Hill in South Oklahoma City. Like that, that's how huge that ward is. And, you know,
Joe Beth goes down by the airport, right? Like that's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, cause we live right in the core of the city. It takes us literally taking Joe to the airport in about an hour. Like it literally takes us 20, 25 minutes to drive there. Right. And that is one ward. So, you know, these are larger than state Senate districts. These are almost congressional.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting though, because nobody votes in these races. Right. So the turnout is just abysmal.
Yeah. I think with them being, you know, it's always a odd year and you know, February and March or February and April, it's just, you know, they're weird dates. So they're really low turnout.
But that's an advantage, right? It's an advantage to where somebody can go knock the doors, do the hard work. Somebody can go do the hard work, can really drill in on the messaging that they know works, right? And I mean, I also think we saw some of the Merrick Cornett messaging backfire, right? Like you saw some of this, like, I don't know anyone. And I know it's anecdotal, but I don't know anyone who's pro-police in this part of the city. Like, but that was some of the messaging. And that IE absolutely backfired, right? And, you know, and Joe Beth, because she was able to talk about these things. Also, the mailboxes were being flooded. And I cannot tell you how many people I would see at the Wilson pickup line every day that was like, I'm voting for Joe Beth because my mailbox is full, right? Like, because we were getting like, I think they sent, I don't know how many they sent. We only sent six, I believe, mm-hmm. and they were sending like triple that, right? In addition to what was happening on the independent expenditure side. And that to me is a disconnect between having Democrats run the campaign and Republicans run the campaign. And because they're used to really like trying to target those low information voters and really just try to go off of name ID, and Democratic voters and well-educated city council voters are going to pay attention a little bit more.
Yeah, and people have asked us before if we, oh, are you interested in maybe doing, you know, working for moderate Republicans? And even if there was a moderate Republican that I felt like I could help out, which I can't name one, I would almost be doing them a disservice in their campaign because, you know, especially in if you're talking about either, whether it's city council or a primary or a runoff, a lot of it's just about connections and you're messaging to a completely different audience, right? You're a Democratic primary electorate versus a Republican primary electorate. And I would never.
I don't think I could hold my nose enough.
Well, that too. But I mean, just, yeah. I mean,
you know this conversation has really though made me think, because I covered the beginnings of maps when I was the Dallas Morning News Bureau chief here in Oklahoma City, and have followed it through. And of course, the idea behind all this, and I think Ron Norick was spot on with this, was you can't throw enough tax money at these companies to get them to move here because the quality of life is not, you know, they can't get their executives and their families to move here. So we sold Oklahoma City on this notion of taxing itself and doing all these wonderful things. Well, here we are all these years later now, and it worked, but not in the way they expected, because what it's done is, instead of, you know, making the establishment more powerful and richer, it's actually made it, you know, more democratic.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I mean, in my opinion, MAPS has been a great, I think the MAPS projects have been outstanding, right? Like they have pushed our city forward in a way that I don't think would have happened like any other way. But I agree with you. And like, we're not ever going to bring companies here unless we actually stop attacking trans people, stop like attacking reproductive rights, because these companies cannot feel safe to bring women. They cannot. I mean, we are the worst country in the health of women in the, I mean, we're the worst state in the country health of women. Like, why would you want to bring approximately half of your employees to a state that doesn't take care of its people, and not to mention the state of our public schools and whatever Ryan Walters is doing. I mean, and that's, but MAPS overall has been a very successful program. And I mean, we're getting the last MAPS for Kids project built at our, which I think is MAPS 3, is that right? MAPS 2 or 3, I don't remember which one, they all, you know, come together right now at Wilson Elementary, right? And to see like MAPS 4 being a lot more social justice focused was really refreshing. I also think that, I mean, in my opinion, that also has to do with the next MAPS project, which is going to largely focus on the Thunder Arena, well, right?
And it's probably just going to be a bond.
Well, the bond, whatever it is. Well, I can't keep it straight.
And I think you have to also look at this race between Joe Beth and Merrick as the backdrop of a new Thunder Arena, because, you know, obviously there's been a lot of talk. There's going to be some type of attempt at public investment, whatever that is, you know, and I mean, Joe Beth even said in the forum, she's okay with some public money, but you know, it depends on, you know, what it is. Can we, and so I think that, you know, I mean, the Thunder is kind of the, you know, they're the organization to point to is like, why MAPS was successful, right? And I love the Thunder.
We love Thunder. Go Thunder.
But
love them so much. But I think that the other thing, kind of on that, is I think people are afraid to have a conversation with someone like Joe Beth about that. And she's actually like got some of the same views as some others on the council, like that she wants to explore it. She wants to look at it. She understands the importance of the Thunder. However, like often she's not brought to the table to talk about these things. And, you know, our ward here in Ward 6 also deserves to be brought to that table, right? As she is our representative that we have elected. And, you know, she's somebody who actually responds and reads the emails and tries to talk to her constituents. And the fact that she's not been brought to that table quite yet is doing a disservice to a large population of the city and a large population of people who are very civically engaged in the city.
You know, and one of the things that I can't help but wonder is fueling younger voters in the core of Oklahoma City in particular, and really transforming the state, I think, politically over the long haul here, is this notion that what they have seen in Oklahoma City is that government actually does work. You know, this notion for years that Republicans sold that government, you know, the nine worst words in the American, you know, in the English language, you know, I'm from the government and I'm here to help, whatever the old Ronald Reagan line was, you know, actually government can work for the greater good and does work. And you see it in all these MAPS projects. And so they're more than willing to continue to vote for people who continue to pursue the right policies, smart policies, and that's where we're headed.
Well, and that's if, you know, when Mitt Cornett would run for, when he ran for governor or ran for U.S. Senate, that was used against him. He presided over one of the largest tax increases in the history of Oklahoma. And it's true, and in the Republican primary, that hurt him, but, you know.
But I mean, I guarantee you, if he would have gotten through that primary, there would have been a lot of crossover votes, right? Because he was looked upon. I mean, and to bring it back to where we are, I you know, the Cornett name, like we have to think about that a little bit in this Ward 6 race. I mean, it did matter, right? However, again, these new people who live in Oklahoma City have no idea who Mitt Cornett is, have no idea the history of MAPS. And so you're just brought, like, that almost is just canceled out. And you know, I do agree with you, Arnold, that like government has worked here, right? Like, I'm pretty happy with our city government. But then at the, you know, flip side of that, if we let our city council become what the legislature is, where it's like one set of ideas, you know, then it's going to stop working. It's going to stop working for the people our most vulnerable here in Oklahoma City. And it's going to be just giving handouts to big business. And nobody wants that. Like, nobody wants that anymore. And, you know, I just think that it's just a changing tide here. It just is. And, you know, Democrat versus Democrat, there are two, you know, to bring it back to the reason we're talking here, there are two types of Democrats out there. I think our party is still facing an identity crisis. I really do. Where you see the more establishment types. I mean, we saw this in the 2020 presidential election, right? Like, we saw this, like, in the primaries. Like, you just got the people that are more left that are talking about, you know, just taking care of people, just doing this. Then you've got some that are also like trying to mix both sides of it together. And that is a real thing that we're still trying to figure out as a party.
Well, one of the things that I think, and this kind of broadens the discussion a little bit, I think, to the state as a whole, but one of the things that stands out to me, and I'm curious what you guys think, Democrats have languished in Oklahoma for several decades now. Because they've haven't developed what I call a bench out there. And the election of people like Joe Beth Hammond and James Cooper and Nikki Nice and others, you know, to me signals sort of the begin the rebuilding. You know, it seems to me you sort of have to start there. You have to, and not just in the in Oklahoma City and Tulsa and Norman and Stillwater and, you know, Lawton and places like that. I think even out around the state, the way you begin to rebuild, it's not going to happen overnight, but the way you begin to rebuild and get to a more progressive politics in Oklahoma is to begin to elect people at the school board level and at the city council level and the county commissioner level and those sorts of things, so that people, when you do end up in partisan races, you know, somebody registers as a Democrat to run, they go, I didn't know he was a Democrat necessarily, but boy, he sure got things done on the school board, and I trust him or her, you know, right?
Yeah, I think, you know, when we first started our company, I mean, part of it was we were so tired of seeing the same conservative to moderate old white dudes being recruited. And Arnold, I'm sure you remember the days of that, like to run in these districts that were changing. And you know, you look at our leader, Cindy Munson, we talked to her 2013 to run for that seat up there. And she lost that first race, won that second. Now she's leading the House Democrats, right? That is so important, is to build that bench of people, because we lost it. Once we lost the majorities, everybody kind of gave up for a while. And, you know, as a party, like, that can't happen. I mean, and one other thing, and then I'll let Joe talk because I'm dominating the conversation. Sorry, y'all. One other thing, our maps are crap, right? Like, our maps are so gerrymandered that there is not necessarily, I mean, we're getting 40% statewide. Why do we only have 20 seats? Why do we only have in the House 8 in the Senate, right? Like, it should be a little bit more equitable, right? I'm not saying we're getting majorities anytime soon. However, we should be able to get close to that breaking that super minority status, right? However, we can't right now because our maps are so gerrymandered.
Yeah. And I think we've done better over probably the past decade about just as a party as a whole, as looking at different types of candidates and who should be running and who shouldn't. And just even that phrase, like, who should or shouldn't be running, because there's this idea that, you know, we need to pick a certain profile. You know, almost every candidate that we worked with, that's especially women, especially people of color, have been told at one time or another when they started out that they weren't the right fit. They, you know, maybe they should do something else. Or
I just want Arnold eye rolled and I rolled along with them. Just wanted the listeners to know.
Yeah, I know that's out there, but it's still shake your head.
Jeez. I mean, you would think, like, it's 2023 that we'd stop saying that, but it happens every election, yeah, I think we've ever been in.
And that's what we have to do as a party. I mean, we still do this, you know. I mean, that when people want to run for office, and if they look different than probably what we're used to seeing, which looks a lot like me, white and male, there's still, and I think it comes from some of the people that have been around for a while or some of the elites or, you know, love Joe Biden. But, you know, even in this day and age, it maybe, you know, there's a whole argument there. If, you know, we had to do it. We didn't. I don't know. But we have to do a better job of, and those type of candidates, and Cassie can talk about this more, particularly with women, white men get up in the morning and look at themselves in the mirror and say, I should be a politician. And, you know, others, especially women, you know, they are more about the actual work and making change. And a lot of times they don't connect that to public office. And that's something that we really tried to do. You have to go seek those people. You have to ask them to find the people who are really making change in their communities and ask them to run for office because, you know, again, it's they're actually doing real things, which more politicians or people in office should be doing.
But once you get them to do it, they have to be supported. And it doesn't always happen, as Cindy Munson's case illustrates vividly, the first time around.
Right. You know? And I mean, oftentimes when I used to work for Sally's List, you know, the organization here to recruit women to run for office, progressive women. And, you know, one of the studies, the Rutgers Center for American Women in Politics, I believe is what it's called. You know, they've got all these studies out there about how to get women to run, how to retain them, how to keep them running again. And oftentimes, like, you have to run more than once to get there, right? And like Joe said, women have to be asked to run. We don't inherently wake up in the morning and say, hey, I should be an elected official. I will say, with representation out there, you know, we're much more equitable at the national level than we used to be. It's still not, there's still not parity. Even in Oklahoma, we used to be 49th in the nation in female representation. We've bumped up just a little bit. We're still pretty bad. I think it's 20%. We used to be 12. But we still need to do better. But you look at both Democratic caucuses, they have parity, right? And I think it's a large credit to the recruiting that's happened. Yeah, I mean, we've recruited. I'll give ourselves a little pat on the back, but also some of the other organizations out here and people really being intentional about seeking out the right people that would represent, that can show my daughter, like, oh, she can be in places in the halls of power, right? And there's just a lot. There's still some, like, just like we see in the ward, just like we see in the city, a lot of tension there between, like, the old guard, the new guard, and it still exists. And you see it often happen in these races where we have primaries.
So how do we move forward here in a way that takes advantage of the opportunities and gives people some heart that, you know, that better days are ahead and maybe sooner even rather than later? And I just point out one thing, and Mary Ann's probably sick of me talking about this, but I found it interesting that more Democrats voted in Oklahoma County in the clerk's race a couple of weeks ago than Republicans did. Now, there were five, I think, Democrats in the race or whatever, but still, you know, that's really? I mean, I tend to think Oklahoma County's blue, so.
I do too.
So I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but to me, that's just another sign of what's happening out there. So how do you, you know, what's the road forward, do you think, to bring the state back to a saner politics?
I just want to connect it to you. I just want to jump to the next thing that we want to talk about is, like, with both of your experiences with politics outside of Oklahoma, you know, what do we need to bring in from other places to do that? So, Go on, Joe. Yeah.
I think I could talk about this and have a list of like 20 things. I still think we need to, especially when we start talking about people running for office for at the top of the ticket, whether that's governor or Congress or U.S. Senate. Again, we need to stop looking for the same type of candidate we've had for 20 or 30 years. And that's not, I'm not trying to slight anyone who's run before. It's just, it's a different party. And then we have to have a real focus on our urban communities and not just try and talk to the voters in these communities 3 weeks before election day. We're very bad at that. You know, it's like Democrats in general, and I've even been guilty of it in the past, and trying to be more aware and cognizant of whether that's political communication or organizing or anything like that. We need to be engaging people year round and off election years. Because when most people realize or hear about what's going on at the Capitol, you know, they're pretty upset about it, but they can't connect that to voting. And quite frankly, why would they? You know, if you're someone who's kind of disgusted what's going on and you're not engaged, then, you know, it's one of the many problems we have, but we have to figure out that.
And I think the other thing that has been a struggle, and I mean, at least while we were doing Skyfire, and it's part of the reason we started our business, is that we have a lack of political infrastructure on the Democratic Party side right now. So much of the structure was housed within our business and other private companies. And that is not healthy. And quite frankly, doesn't build any kind of long-term infrastructure. I mean, I think Marianne asked this, like, we've decided to close down Skyfire after 10 years. We're very happy that we made it 10 years, but I mean, we're tired. Like, we're looking for, you know, having more work-life balance than we did before, because, you know, we got two kids and, you know, we've just learned we're tired and stressed and want to break a little bit. But you know, that's part of it. Our caucus programs ceased to exist, caucus political programs. And so many candidates were out here running without any help because we could only take on so many. You know, we were trying not to overextend ourselves. So we would have to tell no to candidates, and we hated it, but we did have to be very realistic about the time we could give them. And until we have like more stronger political infrastructure here for the campaign side, we are going to continue to fail. And I do think there's a concerted effort, which I'm sure Joe could talk more about in a second, to do so. I mean, and I'll just kind of chime into what I'm doing next, because it is part of this. I got a job in March 2021 working for the Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee as a regional political director. And my main job is building caucus programs so we can actually win elections, build long-term infrastructure. And this last cycle, I was able to help the New Hampshire House Democrats literally redo their campaign arm. And they got within 4 seats of the majority and are literally like living in an attendance majority in the, I think it's the 3rd largest legislative body in the Western world with 400 strong in a state of 1.4. Really? Oh, yeah. And so literally you've got, now we just won a special election Tuesday, 198 Democrats and 201 Republicans with one other special election happening in May. And, you know, to see what they were able to do by building some infrastructure right there. And of course, New Hampshire has better infrastructure in general because of the first in the nation primary. But to see that happen there, to see it happen in Arizona, to where they were kind of close to where we are on chamber margins about 10, 15 years ago, now they are one away from having the majority in each chamber. And here we have suffered a huge loss because of everybody kind of not building, continuing that political infrastructure. And Arnold, you know, Joe and I both used to work for the caucuses. One of my first jobs was with the Senate caucus in 2006. And, you know, then we both worked at the House caucus 2010. And these were here to support candidates without a profit in the middle of it. So it really did, you know, build some of that, keep those campaigns going. And we have to look at the success of other states. We have to look at Kansas, who's about to break the supermajorities, right? Like, because that is the goal. We're not winning majorities at any point right now. Like, we're just not. And then election reforms, which I'm sure Joe can talk more about too, like independent redistricting, like actually having fair maps here, because right now they're just abysmal. They're abysmal.
Well, and unfortunately, COVID delayed that because we were headed down that road, and I believe it would be successful.
I do too.
I mean, Joe, on the ballot.
Joe was helping with the campaign.
Yeah,
it's painful.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and there's still some grassroots support for it, and this is where we need to change our. I think we're doing better about it, not just looking at the next election cycle, but looking ahead. What can we start working on now? well, for instance, I'll kind of tell you about a little bit what I'm doing. I'm now the executive director of the Oklahoma House Democratic Campaign Committee, which is it's the caucus for the House. We're kind of restarting the House political caucus program. The goal is to build out a staff to help all candidates running, Democratic candidates running for the House, and provide them with services and campaigns and staff so that they have the tools they need to be able to win. Also to help recruit, Leader Munson, she's 110% behind it. And she, this is one of her big ideas and her initiatives. And we really think we can get to 35 by 2030. You know, and that's the type of things we need to be looking at, you know, not how many seats we pick up, you know, next year or 2 years, but like
10, 20 years down the road. That's what got to be.
But 30 or 35 in the Oklahoma House gives you a lot of leverage.
Yes.
You know, I mean, we saw, you know, Scott Inman was brilliant at sort of leveraging what he had, you know, at close to 30 or around 30 at the time. And I know I had the conversation, Jared Deck came right after his election in November to our newsmakers event at Full Circle. And he said, you know, and of course he's a son of Thomas and, you know, he did a lot of work in Western Oklahoma, mm-hmm. You know, in the hinterlands. And so he knows kind of what it's like out there. But he said, you know, if we'd have had $5 million of the money that was spent in the governor's race, you know, we could have won several more seats, and which would have given people, and I don't begrudge, I thought it was a gamble worth trying.
I thought
Joy Hoffmeister was a great candidate, and I thought, and Gina Nelson, you know, was a great candidate, and if they could have won, I thought it would have been a rocket fuel.
Us too. We were excited.
You know, but obviously what we found out is no, there's no shortcut to this, I think, to bringing Oklahoma back to a saner place. And so, you know, to get to 35 by 2030, that actually sounds ambitious, but it does seem doable given the demographics, right?
We have to try. And, you know, you go back to that statewide thing. If we do not organize and deeply organize with a very focused effort in some of the areas like the House races we're talking about, you know, there's overlapping Senate races on top of that, then we're never going to win statewide. Like, because right now, like, because we don't have, you know, the strong presidential primaries and all of that, like, we don't get some of that deep national organizing that happens and the money, as Jared said. Joe's Siri's talking to him. You know, we don't get some of the like strong funds out here at the legislative level or our state party to build strong coordinated campaigns to come out here and just organize and organize and organize for years, not just like Joe said in September, but year round. And that's what has to happen. It's got to be those focused efforts on some of these swing districts or districts trending our way, because without those, it's going to be very difficult for us to win statewide as well.
And you know, we alluded to earlier, I mean, these are places, again, Edmond, Moore, South Tulsa, Lawton, you know, so
Muskogee.
I mean, Muskogee. Yeah. I mean, places where, you know, again, it's, probably maybe not next cycle, but you know, demographics are going to keep changing, and you know, but we have to start now. We have to start organizing. We have to start recruiting candidates there, because you know the same thing, all the House districts in Oklahoma City, you know, we didn't win them the first time that we flipped.
I want to add one thing too. I mean, one issue we've got out here, and I think you mentioned this, is funding, right? Like, for these candidates, and especially on the hard side candidates, hard side PACs, hard side caucus, hard side campaigns, where so much money right now is going to the independent expenditure side. And in my opinion, IEs can be out there. I'm here for it. You know, if the other side's going to do it, we have to do it too. We're playing within the realm of the law right now, unfortunately, wish that money was not in politics, but it is. But unless we have strong hard side campaigns, like, we are never, never, never going to succeed in just having a strong IE side. And like Jared said, you get $5 million of some of that IE money that was spent in the statewides. You get $5 million of that at the legislative level. I guarantee you we would have won more seats, right? And it's because we are literally stretching every dollar possible in, you know, the campaigns themselves from the caucus level. And it's frustrating. It's frustrating. And you'll see donations on statewide campaign ethics reports where they're maxing out and then they're giving $100 to the legislative campaigns. And I don't know if the connection is there. And I mean, even Run for Something, the national organization that recruits a lot of young people to run for office, they did a study after the 2020 election to show that strong legislative campaigns actually had reverse coattails for Joe Biden, where it was, I forget the actual percentage, but I think it was like 0.8 or almost 1% that with the strong legislative campaigns down ballot, Joe Biden performed over Democratic performance by that, by like 1%. And you could see it on the other side where there was no strong legislative campaign and he performed at Democratic performance. So like, that's the kind of stuff we have to connect here. If we're ever going to make change across the state, is we've got to look at the legislative level as the groundwork, the grassroots, and not just legislative, like you mentioned, city council, right? Like some school board, like some of these races we have to look at with a more focused intent to move not just the legislature and the city councils forward, but also the entire state. And we're seeing the damage with Ryan Walters right now. Like, we're seeing this happen and he should have never gotten elected. And we're going to be faced with these types of politicians until we really, really focus as a party.
That may actually help. That may actually help break the logjam, though, on some of this stuff with people who have been, you know,
crossing my fingers,
you know. But I, you know, the other thing real quick, and then we probably need to wrap up because I, you know, we've already taken a bunch of your time, but
we could talk about this all day long.
Yeah.
Well, I know. And that's the problem. And we, you know, we should have a weekly episode, but, you know, one of the things that I have seen a lot of is, you know, I've met a lot of people who I thought were really fine candidates running for legislative office here in Oklahoma, and just ended up getting their heads handed to them on a platter because they had really no money and no support and that sort of thing. And they sort of throw up their hands and say, why, you know, why should I? You know, we all know that sometimes you have to run several times to be successful and you have to be in the right place at the right time for it to be successful. But, you know, some of these folks would have been fine legislators, and had they had support, I think might have run again and been successful that time, you know? And so how you get there is the $10 million question. I don't know.
Well, and I think if we are going to recruit these candidates that look different and come from different backgrounds, it's incumbent upon us to be able to, you know, I've seen a lot of Democratic candidates in Oklahoma, and very, very few of them can self-fund a campaign.
Right.
That's just not the kind of background that we come from. So if we're going to ask them to run, if we're going to ask them to give up, you know, months, days, years of their life to work hard and win these races, we can't just throw them out an island. And that's, we have to at least be able to give them the support we can with the resources we can, but we also have to figure out a way to get the resources to get people over the top too. Because I agree with you, there's been a lot of great candidates that were just on their own, and it's no fault of theirs.
And you know, you mentioned Jared with Western Oklahoma. We sure miss those Western Oklahoma campaigns. They were sure fun, right? Like, there's nothing better than like the mail pieces with the waving wheat in the background. I mean, and to Joe's point too, it's like, we've just got to fund these candidates. We've got to make sure that they've got volunteers. It is impossible to recruit volunteers out here. And I mean, we can, but not enough to really do, like I said, that deep work that it takes to win these races, because we're playing in districts with a 45% Democratic performance. You have to make up that, you know, to get to 50% plus one, you've got to make up that 5%. And the only way to do that is those quality conversations at the doorsteps. And they can't do it alone. So anybody listening out there, find a candidate to volunteer for or donate to. Thank you.
Well, and it's not too early to be thinking about 2024. Obviously.
Oh, no, not at all. We're already thinking about it. Yep.
So, but, you know, ought to be, you know, some folks ought to be spurred on, I would think, by, you know, what we saw in the city council elections here in Oklahoma City. And like I said, even voter turnout here in Oklahoma County in that clerk's race.
Yeah. And I mean, we're performing well across the country right now. And I think, you know, President Biden, while he might be the pariah in many districts here in Oklahoma, I mean, not all of them. And he's actually been able to make some progress in the right direction. And I think it's driving something really great. I mean, who knows what the presidential will do? That tends to ruin a lot of great things for us. But I mean, you know, go like the education thing, the public ed, you know, vouchers, very unpopular, right? Like very unpopular. Ryan Walters is probably going to continue to become more unpopular. And look at 2018. We swept just about everything mm-hmm. in 2018 because people were motivated and mad. And it was because of the teacher walkouts and everything else going on, not just here, but around the country. So hopefully it keeps up. But I mean, at the end of the day, we're never catching the pendulum when it swings our way unless we have the infrastructure in place to do so.
Yep.
Well, guys, thanks so much for spending an hour with us. We could talk a whole lot longer, and we are going to keep you on speed dial so that...
Oh, anytime. We're here to talk anytime. We love this.
Yeah, I mean, I always say this, no one goes to work in politics to get rich. And so we love this. We love what we do. We love working with people. I can't believe it's been 17 years, but you know, I love that we're still all doing our part and still around.
Trying to get this state to a better space.
I know. Yeah. I mean, and part of the kids to grow up here, right?
Yeah, like,
kids to stay.
I just hope I live long enough to see it happen. But
We're trying.
All right. Well, you guys hang in there and we'll talk soon then.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Arlen. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of ObserverCast. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends about us and share our episodes far and wide on social media. If you're interested in sponsoring ObserverCast, please give Arnold Hamilton a call at 405-478-8700 or drop him an email at ahamilton@okobserver.org. You can also support ObserverCast with a tax-deductible donation to the Oklahoma Observer Democracy Foundation, whose mission is to help create a better, more informed Oklahoma. And to help keep us on the air, visit okobserver.org and click on the Donate button on the upper right side of the homepage. We also urge you to subscribe to the Oklahoma Observer, now in its 55th year of comforting the afflicted and afflicting the comfortable. We have a special digital subscription rate for ObserverCast listeners, only $1.99 a month for the first year. That's 50% off the usual rate for monthly digital subscribers. Just use the coupon code ObserverCast when checking out to get the discount rate. And finally, we want to thank Jared Deck for the music you're listening to in the background here. He's not just the resident of Norman anymore. He is now the Oklahoma State Representative for House District 44. Congratulations, Representative Deck. We're so proud of you. But you can still download his albums at iTunes and learn more, including dates for any upcoming performances at jareddeckmusic.com.